Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Bone of the Mo Thugs movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. As always, we got to give a shout out to our sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitcheran and Juan Ramirez, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, and the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. You know, if it wasn't for this gentleman, we wouldn't have a show. They pay for the bills up front, and I'm very, very humble and gracious for that aspect in my life. You know, today's show, I'm really interested and intrigued about it to my listeners. I've done separate interviews with fathers and sons, but I've never had the two on the same show at the same time. And to top it off, they're tremendous athletes in all walks and aspects of life. With that being said, I want to welcome Fernando Marrero and Jonathan Smith to the program. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Hey, Don, how you doing?
Wonderful.
Thanks for having us on.
Well, the honor is all mine. You know, when I did the write-up for the show, it touched my heart. Because, Fernando, you and I we're friends on social media. We had never really communicated before. I reached out to you after your post, you know, even though we have several mutual friends in common. You know, what I saw was a father who was proud, a father who, you know, had true respect for his son, which in turn made me realize what type of man you are and the type of life that you gave your son and his upbringing. What is it about you and your lifestyle and who gave you that intent that allowed you to instill that in Jonathan?
Oh, man. Well, I just think that's something that's been, you know, instilled in me intrinsically, spiritually. You know, it's an innate thing. Also, you know, something that I've gotten from my grandparents. I was raised by my grandparents, you know, come from very humble beginnings, impoverished, disenfranchised, you know, poor background, you know, dysfunctional family, the whole nine, you know, very multiracial, multi-ethnic, diverse family, you know, and then at the tail end of civil rights, you know, mixed families. You know, my father was, you know, white, Caucasian. My mom is Afro-Latina. So, you know, a lot of things were taboo going on back then. But no, for my grandparents, I mean, I had my grandparents up until maybe I was about 15 years old, and, you know, they were, you know, married for 35 plus years, and my mom is the baby of 13, you know, and and when they died, they ended up dying, you know, 5 months apart. So just everything that they instilled in me, you know, what I had to view and to look up to as a base model of what love, family, relationship, marriage, you know, just so, you know, I wanted to, you know, emulate that in whatever respects I could moving forward, you know, in life. And that, once I became an adult and became a father, and, you know, I wanted to give to my children what I didn't have, you know, in my childhood, in my boyhood. You know, I didn't have my father around. My father, you know, and my mom, they got married young, you know, high school sweethearts, whatever have you, divorced when I was, what, 2-3 years old, and my father disappeared. Next time I met my father, I was, what, maybe 15, 16, and You know, I was in group homes and institutions and foster homes and all that stuff. My grandparents had died. You know, my mom had, you know, battled a long time substance abuse, you know, addiction issues for most of my childhood, and didn't really have too much to really go on. So I knew I wanted to do things differently than what I had experienced, and I wanted to give to my sons what I never had, and that was a father in all aspects.
That's deep, because, you know, I truly understand that. My real father, you know, was around until he was 5 years old. I had six other brothers and sisters, and my father left. And my mom brought some guy home from the bar one night, and he never left. But for some reason, out of the seven kids, I was the only one that he didn't like, so he beat on me. And I was shuffled from place to place, and ultimately back with my real father, who was extremely wealthy, and he said, I didn't sign up for this, and he put me into military school. So,
yeah.
You know, family life is very unique, because I don't understand it, because I truly never had it. My mother didn't tell me I love you until I was 30 years old.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, nah, it's good, though, bro. Life, God creates our path. We just walk it.
Yeah.
You know, I want to jump to you, Jonathan. You know, you look at back when you were young, and you look at all the aspects your father tried to, you know, perplex in your life and teach you and guide you. You know, we all, you know, let's just be honest. We all look back at those moments, and, you know, we all sometimes say something underneath our breath, or, you know, cuss them out when they're not around, or this and that. But how is it for you now, looking back at the life that your father instilled in you and the abilities and opportunities that he gave to you and gave up to give to you, now as a young man, how does it make you feel knowing that he truly wanted a better life for you?
You know, it's crazy. I wish that I had learned more, because when I was younger, I was definitely hard-headed, and my dad always told me a hard head makes a soft body in life, and man, was that not the truth. I can't think of any lesson that he didn't teach me that doesn't apply to me today, which is absolutely insane. It's like the ultimate deja vu. Oh my God, your dad was right. But throughout those moments in your life as a young child, you really... you don't understand a lot of things. And then when you grow up and you start to understand them more, then everything kicks in. Maturity kicks in, personality kicks in, and then you get this whole newfound respect for your parents. And, man, I am, like, bawling over here for you in your situation. That's really sad, man. I'm just glad that my dad, even though he came from a horrible past, he was able to change my life.
Yeah. And see, that's what's beautiful about it. And, you know, we look at life, and sometimes we take things for granted, especially a lot of these millennials, this entitled generation. You know, I'm 53 years old, so it's got old cats like me kind of just going, man, if y'all only knew that society is digressing because your parents don't want to take the time to teach you, they don't want to take the time to show you. You know, they just want to hand you a cell phone or a tablet and expect you to shut up. You go out to a restaurant, nobody's talking because they're all on their phone. You know, I'm sure your father could attest to it. There was days back in my time that Sunday was family day. You know, whose ever house it was, everybody showed up. You know, you'd kick the furniture to the side. People, like in my house, we had mariachis and homemade tamales and everything. But, you know, we'd have family reunions, picnics and things. Those things are gone. So how hard is it for a young man like you, Jonathan, to keep that faith and that respect that your father's instilled in you and stay on the path that you're on now? Because it's a tremendous path you're walking, son.
Well, thank you so much. And if I'm being honest with you completely, it's not hard to keep the discipline and all the lessons that he taught me, but it is hard to find a group or people or just a moral person that has those lessons. Like, I've never seen, like, my group of my generation sucks horribly. And, like, I'll give you a story. There's this girl and her father. Her father is one of the, hands down, one of the nicest moral men I've ever met in my life, and I respect him until the day I die because of all that he's done for me when it came to wrestling. But his daughter treats him like anything I've ever seen. I've never seen a child cheat their parent like that. And I always try to figure out, is this some sort of resentment? Like, why does he let her treat him like that? What type of guilt do you have that you're going to let your kid treat you like that? And it's just the hardest thing to watch because you think that you grew up a different way because someone taught you with some sense, and because you didn't have a phone. I didn't have a social media account until last year. Like, seriously. Like, I didn't have Instagram or Facebook until I became a junior. Well, literally when I became 17, my dad thought I was ready. I think that's some good parenting. But all these other kids think that the internet of their life matters. They think that because they post a picture, somebody in the world is going to care about them more than their parents do. And when you look at that from my perspective, seeing everything that your dad's gone through and seeing how the world revolves around everything that you do, it's crazy.
And there's definitely been a breakdown within the family dynamic. Definitely, you know, I think, and not knocking mothers or whatever have you, but I knew what that pain was like, you know, with an absentee father, you know, what it's like to not have a father. And I think it's imperative, truly, truly imperative for, you know, in order for any child to truly be successful. I mean, anybody can be successful. You know, there's, you know, a myriad of, you know, different, you know, scenarios and circumstances and outcomes. Everybody's circumstance is different and will be different. But I think that it's truly, truly imperative, vital and important for there to be a strong patriarchal presence in the household. And that's something that was instilled in me that I've seen in my grandfather. And my grandfather's, you know, old school, old country, Latino from, you know, from Puerto Rico, you know, very, very strong Roman Catholic, thick accent, mustache, you know, very, very alpha male and very strong, you know, very old school. I mean, some people nowadays want to call it, you know, chauvinist or sexist or whatever have you. And, you know, him and my grandmother had a wonderful, wonderful, great relationship as far as that, you know, I can remember from my experiences. And, you know, they never argued, you know, they never, I'm sure they had their problems and they argued or whatever, but nothing was ever exposed to the kids, you know. And he was the head, and I remember my grandmother used to say, baby, your grandfather, he's the head, but I'm the neck, and I can make that head turn in any direction that I damn well please. So, you know, definitely everybody has their part, and I think it's, you know, vital for people to understand roles and whatever their respective roles are in a situation, in a relationship, you know, at the job or wherever, you know, in whatever capacity in life, you know. Just if everybody, you know, contributed and stayed in their lanes and played their roles and their positions, you know, to a T, everything just goes smoothly.
Honestly, I just think that the kids are depressed because they don't have enough time with their parents, or their parents don't make the effort, instead of giving them the phone, to give them their attention. I don't believe that all these kids are just born bad yelling at their parents. I feel like there is a certain set of actions that you literally have to take in order to have your kid just yelling at you and trying to belittle you. It's crazy.
And like Jonathan said, a lack of discipline. I mean, I'm from the old school.
Oh,
so
yes, he is.
I believe in, excuse my language, am I allowed to curse on here? I believe in that.
Yeah, you're allowed to say whatever you want, sir.
Okay, I believe in ass whoopings. I got my ass whooped growing up. I did a lot of dumb, stupid stuff as a kid. All kids do. And sometimes you need to, you know, a tap on the ass or two or three or four, however many or whatnot, to kind of get you back in gear and get you back in line, you know. And I thank my grandparents. Like, I reflect and, like, I thank the heavens above for my grandparents and for the discipline, for, you know, the spankings, beatings, whoopings, whatever, however you want to call it, you know. And I just, you know, a lot of people in today's society have just become soft.
And honestly, I'm thankful for the whoopings myself. Like, it may sound crazy, but, I mean, there were times you just knew what type of whooping that you were going to get, and it really taught you a lot about life. Like, you could come into the room, and if my dad had his arms crossed, you knew you were going to get a classic style, like, shogun beating. it is just, I'm grateful, you know.
You don't explain
the right way.
Hey man, I'm a father of a 33-year-old man, and you know, if it wasn't for God putting this man in my life, because like I said, I never had a father figure, and you know, I graduated with honors from military school at 16, and I had an opportunity to go into Officers Training Academy, and I chose not to, and I had bought a car, and with all the money that I saved over the years, because I always stayed with the Guardians. I never got the opportunity, except for once in a great while, to go home. And so I saved all my money, and I bought a car. I drove it from Michigan to California, showed up at my mother's doorstep. She says, what in the F do you want from me? And I was like, wow, you know, I guess nothing. And, you know, I lived in my car for a bit, and you know, Wendy's used to have those salad bars in the middle of the restaurant, and people used to get a yellow plate from the counter, and I'd wait for somebody to throw one away. I'd take it in the bathroom, and I'd wash it. And that's how I'd eat, or sit out beside, you know, Burger King or McDonald's to the end of the night. And, you know, that's how I lived. And one day I just couldn't do it anymore. And I was sitting on a step, and I was beside myself. And, you know, if you don't believe in God and you're listening to the show, that's your choice, you know, and I'm not taking that right away from you, but I believe in God, because this man came up to me and asked me what was wrong, and I thought something was thrown off about him, you know, why would, you know, because I never had anybody want to give me anything, and he said, you know, explain to me. So I told him what was going on. I told him, now get the F away from me. He goes, no, man, why don't you let me give you a job? Why don't you let me give you a place to stay? And the first thought, you think, man, this guy's a pervert, a pedophile, or, you know, some weird thing going on. Well, it turns out he was a preacher who happened to own a construction company. And this man, I call him my grandfather, even though we're not blood, because he taught me what it is to be a man.
Yeah.
And he taught me what it is to be able to suck up your mistakes and learn from them and admit to them and control 100% transparency in life. And the reason I bring this up is because I see that between the two of you. You know, I don't know what it is to have a core family, but I believe in ass whoopings too. And trust me, the first day the school taught my son, oh, I'm going to call CPS on you. I said, go ahead, here's the phone. But I guarantee you, I'm going to give you a reason. I'm going to give you a reason for them to arrest me. And he never had that problem, you know. See, back in my time, we were lucky to have a 12-inch black and white TV. Color TV hadn't even came out yet, you know. So I've grown up with this transition. And that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to do this show today. Because, Jonathan, what you've shown the world, what you've proven to the world, and what you've shown your father in the art of Greco-Roman wrestling is tremendous. You know, the ability that you've exuded in the sport is getting the nation's attention. You know, it caught my attention, and I know, along with a bunch of other colleagues, I've already talked about the aspect of who you are. I've talked because I have a lot of friends in wrestling, you know, pro and just, you know, collegiate. But you inspire me. You go out there and you do what it takes time and time again. You know, it's hard in life. We know we've already talked about what the aspect of family and that hardness and what the reality of that is. But explain to my listeners what the reality is when you step up to the mat time and time again. You know, how hard is it on you mentally, physically, as a warrior to prepare for battle? Because that's what you truly are doing.
Well, preparing for battle, it's no matter what you do, no matter how you're going to do it, no matter how you take the step, before you take the step, when you step up on that mat, your body's already going to crumble. It's going to cramp. It's going to give you all these nervous feelings. And at the end of the day, the thought is, before you finally shake that man's hand, can I do this? And out of my, I would say, good 8 years wrestling, I can honestly say that if you had the guts to take that first step on the mat, you can do it. Like, I've never been in a match where I have, like, where I haven't had any confidence in myself. You have to not just believe, but you have to understand that in your heart and in your last training over and over and over again, this guy is either just as scared or just as confident as you. And there's really no you just can't underestimate anybody. When you go up on that mat, it's the greatest feeling because you know that you've put in all your heart and all your love and all your soul. It's like going to see that beautiful girlfriend that you want to see after that hard day of work. There's no feeling like it. You got to love what you do. You just got to love going up on that mat. Even though you're preparing for a battle, you're preparing, how I look at it, you're preparing for a battle with yourself, with your will, with your heart. And, of course, a guy can just be 10 times as worse as, they can be horrible. They can be the worst wrestler on the planet. But even though they can be the worst wrestler on the planet, if they have the will to beat you, trust me, they will do some magical things. I had a match once against this El Camino guy, and I knew he wasn't as good as me. And when it comes to technique and speed and ability, he would have never beat me. But this guy put me to my back because he wanted to win that bad. He wanted to win that bad. He put me on my back twice. And if it wasn't for the bell ringing at the last second, I most likely may have not gotten off my back. And people still talk to me about that day, like, John, you were on your back. He could have pinned you. He could have beat your undefeated streak before Malik Lewis did. And I was like, yeah, you're right, he did.
There's one thing about Jonathan that, you know, people who are blessed enough to have the opportunity to get to know him, to know his past, you know, his origins, where, you know, where he's been, where he's come from, and just, you know, what he's accomplished. You know, Jonathan has a big heart, you know, not just so much in the aspect of, you know, just lovable and amiable and just easygoing. And, like, he's got a rock star personality. He's just a great, great, great kid with a great spirit, very meek, very gentle, you know, sometimes wears his heart in his sleeve. But he's also very competitive. And he's got a big heart in the competition aspect to where, you know, once upon a time ago, Jonathan wasn't always this, you know, Soviet-Russian perfect experiment gone right in a lab somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, once upon a time ago, he was this very frail and meek and gentle, like, flower child.
Flower child.
And he was,
even though
he still big smiles and love and hugs and kisses, but when he was a kid, he was hugs and smiles and kisses and flowers and the sky, and just he was just free.
But don't let that derail you now.
Yeah,
when it came game time,
yeah, but
I brought it on.
But even then, when he wasn't, you know, developed or athletically gifted, and he was just a free spirit and just all over the place or whatever have you, he had a huge heart in the competition aspect to where he would always, when I first had him start out, we had him start no DDT submission wrestling with Coach Ahmad Reese, who's a pioneer in MMA and the MMA scene in Los Angeles area. You know, there's a small little gym down there in Leimert Park in the hood, 43rd and Crenshaw, right there in South Los Angeles. And you know, that's where I started my training and took John there when he first started, and he's about 6-7 years old, and no experience, no nothing, but he just wanted to go, and he would call out the biggest, baddest, toughest sumbitch in the room, get his ass kicked a million times, but he Maybe he was a glutton for punishment, but he would just, you know what, we're going again. I want to go. And even to this day, you know, throughout the years, like, he still does that. Like, he'll go, you know, he's that insane. Like, he'll go with, you know, Bruce Baumgartner in his prime, or, you know, Dan Gable in his prime, or he'll go against Marius Pugenowski or any other world strongman.
Actually, it's funny, in Vegas, I went and I challenged Jaden Cox.
You know,
I got beat up, but I put him to his back once.
like he's just, he's a go-getter, and Jonovan is a tough SOB, and his work ethic. His work ethic is unparalleled, and, like, it's incomparable. Like, I've never seen any kid from the time that he was a little boy till now that has worked as hard as he has and continues to put forth, you know, that workload. Like, he's a workhorse. And now he's a Soviet, you know, Russian experiment in a laboratory, you know, like, he makes Ivan Drago, you know, look like a bitch, you know?
Yeah.
They can't work it out with each other, probably.
he probably would go with him. But, you know, the thing of it is, it's tremendous because, you know, I've been in this sport a long time, as you already know, Fernando.
Uh-huh.
And this is a breath of fresh air because, you know, you look back to, like, UFC 194, you had the beginning of the entertainment aspect of MMA with Conor McGregor, and then a young gentleman that I helped define his career from the beginning, Colby Covington, decided that he was going to take it a step further and further ruin the sport and make a mockery of Brazil. And I actually kicked him off of a show. I just couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't deal with the arrogance anymore because my life is about respect and respecting the fighters. Because, like I told you when we scheduled this, you know, if it wasn't for all aspects and all genres of the sport, I wouldn't have a roof over my head. I wouldn't have food in my stomach. I wouldn't have been able to take care of my family. You know, life is about giving back without expectations and passing it forward.
It is.
That's how I roll. So you're not going to get a standard Wikipedia or Tapology show out of me. I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah.
I told you that from the get-go. But, you know, Jonovan, it's like I interviewed Kung Lee. And, you know, here I take this man from the fall of Saigon, leaving in a helicopter under artillery shell, you know, fire, and take him from that aspect of his life to being bullied at 8, 9, 10, 11 years old in the United States. And it was a tremendous interview. He said it was actually one of the best interviews he had ever been given. And I was sitting here one day, and he called me, and he says, I want to do another show. He goes, you better bring the fire. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, I already asked this man everything that I could possibly ask him because he was on for like an hour and a half. And I thought he was joking. Well, 2 hours before showtime, he calls me, says, McGuire, you better bring it, because if you don't, I'll never come on your show again. and he's serious. If you know Kung Lee, that's how he is. And so I sat there for 2 hours, and I asked myself a question, and I kept asking myself. And then, you know, it kind of replayed out in my heart and in my thoughts with you, Jonovan. You know, he said that certain aspects define him. And so I asked him the question, what does pride, passion, and perseverance truly mean to Kung Lee? And now I'm going to pose it to you. What does pride, passion, and perseverance truly mean to Jonovan Smith?
What it means to Jonovan Smith is, oh man, I love this question. Pride, perseverance are two things that just connect wonderfully in my heart. When you have pride, it's the ability to just have any sort of confidence. My coach tells me that I'm the most delusional guy that he's ever met in his life when it comes to wrestling, because I think I can beat anybody. And he says that is the greatest quality about you. And I guess my pride comes from just wanting to be the best. but not the best in the world or the universe, but better than me every single time. And I know that I'm good. And being better than me every day, being better than that guy, that it's like reaching for that tall star that you know you won't get, but you're gonna get it. I want to be better than myself every day, and that's where my true pride comes from. I learned that when I was wrestling in this match against this walnut guy. Again, another one of those matches where the guy's not as good as you, but he's beating you by like five, and you're like, oh my gosh, and I had to make one of the biggest comebacks in my life and come up 5 points with 30 seconds left in the third period, and when the score was 7-6 with only 3 seconds left, either I had to take him down or, you know, you won't win. And man, in that match, I was thinking for the first time in my life, because in my life, I've never said in my mind, oh, I want to win, I want to win, I want to win. I've always said that I'm going to go out there and give it everything I got. But in this match, this guy drove me to the point in my mindset, which changed me from that day to this day as a person. And I feel like that just went up my game in wrestling. I said to myself, I want to win. I do not want to lose. I want to win, and I want to give it everything that I got. So in that last 3 seconds, when I took him down, in 3 seconds, let me remind you, 3 seconds, that's hard to get a double leg. I don't know for any other wrestler, but the perseverance was defeating time, defeating the impossible. Who can get a takedown in 3 seconds? 3 seconds, 1, 2, 3, like that. But in order to win that match, I had to. And when I took him down, I think that was the biggest flourish of emotion in my life. I've never felt so much emotion. And, man, ever since that day, I was just beyond hooked. That was last year, my junior year, my semifinals match at Rosemead. Rosemead, yeah, the West Coast Classic. Guy from Walnut. And I've never felt so much emotion. Like, it was like such a spike of adrenaline. Like, I almost cried, because when I got that takedown, I felt like it was the greatest feeling in the world, because I had come back and defeated time. Well, you want to know a funny story? Turns out I didn't even get that takedown. Turns out time went out before that. So, I mean, I persevered, but he threw his headgear against the wall, because he thought I got the takedown, and I got the point, which we went to overtime, and I beat him. And there was nothing sweeter than persevering through all of that. Perseverance comes, in my personal opinion, is the perseverance. It comes from when you beat yourself, when you beat the person that you know you can't beat, which is yourself. And when you do beat him, when you persevere through that person, which is yourself.
Uh-huh. And even in the midst of fear, when you conquer things that you perceive that are indomitable and you can't conquer, you know, it's one thing that's a testament to Jonathan and just pretty much is, you know, a testament to, you know, my life, our lives, and the things that I've instilled in him. And, you know, basically, you know, we're walking testimonies and by the grace of God. And, you know, we're not religious or anything like that, but, you know, through Jesus Christ, you know, we're believers. Believe in Jesus Christ as our Lord and personal Savior. We believe in God. Again, you know, we're not Bible thumpers or anything else, but, you know, we know what our experiences are, and God has shown himself, how he's shown himself to us in so many ways that we would be obliviously ignorant and disrespectful to disregard that notion. And any other, you know, experiences, personal experiences and manifestations.
You have to be fooled, please.
But just, you know, we're walking testimonies, man. And through God, by the grace of God, and hard work and dedication, and, you know, us just, you know, keeping our core family unit together, I mean, that resounds loudly. And that can conquer anything, and all things are possible. You know what I mean? Again, you know, we come from a lot of craziness, you know what I mean? We've, you know, just to be PG about it, like a lot of messed up, you know, stuff or whatever, you know what I mean? But, you know, but we're still here, we're still standing, we're still grinding, we're still, you know, pressing forward. And this kid has a lot of passion, so much passion.
And the passion, it honestly does come from everyone around me, but mainly it does come from God. Like, I've never in my life, and I can say this with full-on honesty, I've never in my life had more passion than when I think about God. Like, at the state championships, not once in any of those matches was I wrestling for myself. Before my matches at the state championships, I didn't care about winning or losing. I only cared about honoring God. And it was a spectacular feeling because I knew that I didn't care if I won or lost. I just knew that if I honored God and showed him how he created something that was that could be as big as he could possibly be, all I wanted was just acceptance from God that, thank you, I've given everything to you, and I'm not here to win it, but I'm only here to honor you. And that passion, that fire, that fuel, it just gave me it just gave me more and more for those matches at state, especially in that semifinals match against Joseph Curtis when I really needed it and I was losing 4-0. I was just thinking, what? And it's funny because we had a meeting with a good old friend. He's a military guy, and he's one of my dad's good friends. And he told me, right before I left off to the state title championships, he told me, this pain could hurt. Anything could hurt in the world, but what pain could be worse than how Jesus Christ died for you? And when I thought about that during the semifinals match, I chummed it all up, and I got mad. I escaped. I took him down. I took him down again, and then I took him down again, and I knew I had to hold him down, and I knew that the match was mine. I truly believe that pride, perseverance, and passion all intertwine basically in the same way.
And if we can be a testimony, you know, to anybody else, you know, that's going through things, like, man,
don't give up.
Like, it's never too late. It's not too late. You know, like, you know, we've dealt with homelessness before. You know, I've dealt with homelessness before, betrayal. You know, betrayal, deceit, heartbreak, you know, incarceration, you know, like any and everything, you know. So to people that come, that think they come from nothing and come, you know, from, you know,
you come from every
poor background or whatever have you, or just because you weren't born with a silver spoon or you don't have money or this or that, or, you know, like a lot of the, you know, I'm a military veteran as well, so I understand. I can, you know, empathize with a lot of military veterans and what they go through, you know. And, you know, yo, man, anything is possible. Anything is possible, you know, no matter what the obstacles are, what the odds are. By the grace of God, hard work, dedication, commitment, and just a little bit of love, man. If this world had a lot more love than what it has now, man, it'd be a better place.
Oh, most definitely, you know. I apologize. Go ahead, John.
I can just finally say that passion gives you the pride to persevere. That's my honest opinion.
Yeah, I love that quote. Passion gives you the pride to persevere. You should put that up today, son, because you're a true testament to that. You know, I'm going to ask you a question about an aspect, you know, because it needs to be put out there because it hasn't been done very many times. You won the Triple Crown. You know, listening to this interview, I already know how dedicated you are to the sport. I know how much you listen to your father and your other coaches and your heart and how this truly is who you are. But look back in time to that moment when you won the Triple Crown. You know, how did it define you, or what type of elated aspects do you feel that were contrived or added to you after winning such a prestigious honor?
When I had won the Triple Crown, for the first time after 3 years of trying, endlessly trying, come even close to that. Because I watched my teammate the year before, who was the man in the team at the time, Carlos Gomez. He was the man at the team at the time, and he was the one who was supposed to triple crown, but he came up short. And when I saw what it did to him, and I knew that I had to. I knew that in every work of my being that this was the only way I knew I could make it. I got my first state title in Greco. I knew I had to end my last state title in Greco. And when that bell had finally rung, I knew I made it. I knew that I was elite. I knew that I had an accomplishment that only two guys at my school had. And honestly, like, I remember going into the back and almost crying because it was such an amazing feeling.
And just to, you know, reiterate, I mean, this is, you know, what you said, Don. I mean, this is definitely, you know, who Jonathan is. I mean, Jonathan, you know, is the epitome, the embodiment of a wrestler, of what it is to be a wrestler. And a lot of people think that wrestlers are, you know, similar to other athletes or whatever have you, and that athletes in general are jocks or meatheads. And Jonathan is so far from that. I mean, wrestlers, I mean, the mental toughness that it requires to be a wrestler and to be a mixed martial arts fighter, to be in the combat sports, like, you know, it's a lot of mental toughness, maybe borderline insanity, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Because you keep repeating the same process
over and over,
expecting different results. And granted, you get different results, but also, too, you meet a lot of, you know, a lot of emotional highs and lows and a lot of, you know, obstacles. And it's not all glitz and glamorous, you know, at the beginning in the embryonic stages when you start your career, you know, whether it be, you know, and you know, like, Tag World, California Age Group Wrestling Association, ages 5 to whenever, you know, high school, NCAA, Olympic level, you know, even MMA, and you're fighting on the smokers, and you're fighting the local circuits, the regional circuits, and then, you know, you're fighting on national shows or international promotions or whatever have you. It's a grind, and it's a struggle, it's a hustle, and it's going to test you mentally. But Jonathan is the epitome of a great athlete, you know, a great, great, honorable young man. I mean, he's a 6-time state champion, you know, all in all. I mean, just to list, you know, some of his accomplishments, he's a 4-time Los Angeles regional champion. He's a 3-time Los Angeles CIF city champion. He's a 3-time California state qualifier, CIF. He's a 2-time California CIF state placer. He took second in CIF state. He was a state finalist this past, you know, season. He won Folkstyle State this year. He won Freestyle State this year. He won the California State Greco Open this year. Last year, he placed 8th at CIF State. And just to see that level of progression where he jumped from 8th last year, placing, just barely placing, and now he's in the state finals in CIF. And then he was 2nd in the nation at the USA Folkstyle Nationals in Waterloo, Iowa back in March. Like, he ran up against, you know, a stud in Rocky Elam from Missouri. It was a good kid, great athlete, great wrestler.
Guy.
But, you know.
Most respectful man I've ever been against.
But sometimes, hey, you can't win them all. You win some, you lose some. But it's the character building aspects that you learn along the way. Jonathan was an All-American. He took 7th in the nation in Greco at Fargo 2 years ago in his sophomore year. You know, and then to culminate everything, you know, to become, you know, to win his 3rd consecutive California State Greco title and now officially cementing, you know, the Triple Crown Award, becoming a Triple Crown winner, winning all 3, you know, Freestyle, Folkstyle, and Greco in the same year, in the same season. And now, you know, he's leaving next week on the 14th, be out in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, for the National Duels in Oklahoma. And on the 14th, come back the 23rd, and then in July, going up to Fargo, North Dakota, and trying to finish everything out with a bang and trying to vying for his first national title in Greco and or freestyle at the national championships for Greco and freestyle.
And like my dad says, it's practically insanity when you try and you fail, and the last few years I've always come up short when it came to the national titles coming into the semis or the quarterfinals. It's a hurtful feeling when you lose. And you're left with that thought, can you do this? Can you persevere? Do you have the passion that gives you the pride to persevere? And sometimes you're stuck in this hole. But at the end of the day, if you just put your chin up high, give your graces and say that no matter who's going, all I got is my life to give and I got nothing else to lose. You go out and you give your soul out, and that's all you can do.
Amen. You know, and I'm sure your father's going to understand this, Jonathan, but you may not. You may. You know, I've interviewed some of the greatest legends of all genres of the sport, and I hate to reutilize Kung Lee again, but he's such a defined individual in thought. You know, when I started to talk to him about his accolades, he cut it off right then and there. And I know your father mentioned your accolades, and I was going to mention your accolades, but
I was not.
I thought about it, and you know, the thing of it is what Kung Lee said to me resonated with me going into this interview. He said, if you look over your shoulder at your accolades, you can't move forward as a warrior. You can't move forward pure at heart. Now, I'm going to pose a thought to you, Fernando. Would you say that that's a fair assessment by Kung Lee, since you are, in fact, a mixed martial artist?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because it goes back to lends credence to the old saying that, you know, you learn from your coaches. And, you know, one of my coaches at Blackouts MMA, Coach Kenny Johnson, you know, amongst other coaches, you know, he would always say, you're only as good as your last fight.
Mm-hmm. Every
you know?
Day.
So, you know, and, you know, and it's like you train for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, however long your camp is, you fight, you kick ass, you win, and especially if you win a title, like, it's like, whoa, it's such an adrenaline rush, it's such a high, you know. And then I remember when I first won the title for Gladiator Challenge, my first world title in MMA, this was in 2016, and, you know, I was like, wow, it was amazing. I felt like I was on top of the world, and things were just going to go up and up and up and up. And then 5 minutes later, I'm in the locker room, I'm getting changed. You know, it's like that high is gone. Now it's like, okay, I got to get back in the training room. Like, I got to, like, it's almost like a drug addict. It's like you're chasing the next fix. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can't really, you know, of course, be grateful, be present in the moment, appreciate, you know, your accolades and all your accomplishments. And then, bam, you know, that's it. It's cemented. It's your legacy. It's cemented in history. And move forward, and what else can we conquer? What else can we accomplish? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's tremendous, you know. And Jonathan, congratulations again on becoming the Triple Crown winner. You've done a tremendous, you know, deed and doing something that not many have done. You know, I don't know if Thomas is going to be out there in Oklahoma with you, but Dave Thomas, Sr., is out there in California. His son wrestles, I believe, for Oklahoma State. You know, I think he'll be out at the semifinals. But, you know, you look at life, and this has been a tremendous interview thus far. And I do like to get comical. I do ask some Barbara Walter-esque questions, and I've been compared to some of the most craziest people. And Pat Miletich gets mad, but, hey, you know, he's just going to have to learn to live with it. But
Pat Miletich.
Hey, Pat.
Pat's a trip. You know, I was with him 2 weekends ago, and you got to love him. But, you know, I interviewed Dan Severn. And
The beast, Dan Severn.
Great man, and, you know, he said that I'd given him the greatest interview of his whole career. I didn't give him the greatest interview of his whole career. He gave himself the best interview of his whole career. And my point being is, this platform is about you. People see what they see on social media. They see what they see on television. But they don't get to know the person behind the sport, the aspect, or their walk. You know, I dedicated my life to the sport because of people like you, but I kind of want to take it to a funny aspect because, Fernando, you're a stuntman, you're an MMA fighter, you're in movies, you're everywhere. And
yes, sir.
Jonathan, you're a tremendous young man, but when you're both in the same room, who's the biggest diva?
Jonathan is.
No.
What's the competition? Jonathan's like the incarnation, reincarnation of Terrell Owens.
Okay, that is hilarious. And this guy
get your popcorn ready.
And my father right here.
I love me some me.
He is definitely the ravishing Rick Rude of like.
Oh, wow.
The entire world. Yeah, you
wow.
love yourself some you.
Wow. I compare him to Terrell Owens. He compares me to Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah, because that's
WWE. He's a wrestling legend.
I mean, he thinks he's God's gift to everything. So, I mean.
But Rick Rude was a complete stud, you know, and, you know, by me being in the business in the professional wrestling industry, respect to the legacy and the memory of Ravishing Rick Rude was a tremendous worker, tremendous. Legacy and reputation in the business, you know, in the ring, outside of the ring, you know, and man, what?
That's how you can tell he's definitely like that.
Right?
He was a great worker, true legend, you know.
You know what's funny? Last April, I went up to the return of 2 pound Steve Forbes, former IBF world champion in Clackamas, Oregon. And here I'm surrounded with Garrett Fertig, Bobby Pallotta, Steve Forbes, my mutual host on my Legends in Boxing show, and others. And they're all talking about wrestling. And,
I know crap about it.
I'll be honest with you. My buddy does a wrestling show with somebody else because I don't feel acclimated enough to doing it. You know, you look at wrestling from my era, you're talking about Haystack, Calhoun, Pat Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
Matt Patterson, legends.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you look at the WWE, TNA, I mean, I've interviewed Bobby Lashley and CM Punk and people like that, but I never really have quite, and I don't mean to make you upset, Fernando, but I've never really been able to sit down and truly get into it because, you know, my career of shooting MMA and Muay Thai and all that has really got me gone every weekend. But the WWE is coming to Missouri, and I think my son got tickets for that. So I guess I'll get to experience the full aspect of it. You know, I love shows that, you know, we can have fun, we can joke around, and we can look at, you know, but Fernando, I'm going to ask you this question because you're the elder of the two. You're the parent, and you've created so much, you know, in your life, and you're always moving forward. But when the time comes and things do subside and you do have to step away from all aspects of what you do, God forbid it be anytime soon, how would you like to be remembered?
Oh, wow. You know, I want to be remembered. I'm going to go ahead and quote old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra, you know what I mean? I did it my way, you know? It's crazy, man. Like, I used to be caught up in the corporate rat race of the 9-to-5s and, you know, didn't necessarily truly understand and let alone discover what my gifts are as a young man. I knew I had a lot of gifts, but, you know, it wasn't until recently, you know, maybe the last several years that I really started to really walk in that and truly attuned with, you know, who I was spiritually. You know, and you just, you know, I just want to be remembered as a guy that, you know, just loved to laugh and, you know, loved people and loved everybody. And, you know, he did it his way and he was no nonsense. And he was like a straight true OG. Like, you know, I'm like, I don't bullshit nobody. I tell you like it is. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. Who gives a damn? You know, I'm not into the popularity contests or the pecking orders or the politics. You know, we all know like there's politics in everything and all aspects of life, from MMA to pro wrestling to you know, even Hollywood or whatever, you know what I mean? But, you know, I was just always that guy who, you know, I just stayed sucker free. I wasn't for, you know, that bullshit. And, you know, I never sold out. I never, you know, bent over, you know, backwards and, you know, kissed ass or brown nose. I just wasn't that guy, you know, and people would, you know, misconstrue, you know, brown nosing and kissing ass and selling out with, you know, diplomacy or, you know, being politically correct, and it has nothing to do with that. You know what I mean? You know, I was raised with some common sense, and I have couth and class, and I can be sophisticated. I could be in a boardroom with a suit and tie with Fortune 500 CEO, you know, company, you know, showrunners, producers, directors, you know, whoever. Or I could be with the boys in the back of a locker room somewhere on an indie pro wrestling show or in WWE or with the boys in the back locker room in at an MMA promotion, whether it be on low-level circuit or, you know, in the big time or in Hollywood on set or whatever. I'm just all-around guy, you know. Hey, I overcame a lot, been through a lot of shit. You know, again, I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, originally born in Coatesville, small steel mill mining town about 50 miles southwest of Philly. You know, came out of there. Philadelphia is what, you know, raising me and groomed me and cultivated me into the guy that I am. And a lot of people say, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. Nah, man, I disagree. I believe, truly believe, you can make it in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you can make it anywhere, because Philly is rough, man.
Yeah. You know, some of the most tremendous fighters in the world come from Philly. You know, Jonathan, I'm going to pose the same question to you, but in a different text. You know, you look at your life now and you look over your shoulder, and you look at all the aspects that you've added and created and defined in yourself. If you had to write down a statement in a journal or on a piece of paper, you know, looking back and surmising your life and how much it's meant to you, what would that statement say, son?
The statement would say, it's better to be a warrior in the garden than a gardener at war. That's what my statement would say.
Most definitely. You know, I want to touch on a couple more things before I let you guys go. I know we've already been on the air an hour now, but I'm really digging this interview. I got a couple key notes, and then we can go ahead and wrap things up from there. You know, back in the early 1800s, Greco-Roman wrestling was part of the Olympics, and it was removed, and it wasn't reinstilled back until, I believe, 1893. You know, Jonathan, I've had Joe Warren, I've had several other aspects, hell, I've even had Kenny Johnson on my show. What is it about the aspect of Greco-Roman wrestling that's truly inspired and still the love in you for that aspect of the sport?
It's, man, like, I'm the oldest man, not to diss any of the other styles, but it's a man's sport. Like, it is truly that Greco-Roman wrestling is literally the idea of what wrestling started out to be. Someone trying to overpower you and put you to your back.
No.
It's,
you know,
crazy.
Hey, what's your favorite? You know, because you can look at, you know, people don't understand that there's just different aspects to Greco. You know, what would you say your favorite aspect of Greco is? The freestyle? Or what aspect, you know, because I don't know, folk style, freestyle, the Olympic wrestling style, what aspect is most dear to you?
The aspect of wrestling.
Just the
honestly,
aspect of wrestling.
Yeah. I know this may kind of suck, but I'm kind of a tease when it comes to that. I can't choose between the three styles of folk style, freestyle, and Greco, because I'm very talented at all three. I can do all three with ease. I'm
really good at all three, and
Tara Owen.
Okay. But if I'm being honest, I feel like you need one style to be complete with all the others. I feel like, because when I study wrestling, I just don't study Greco freestyle or folkstyle. I study belt wrestling. I study Sanguinese wrestling. I study belt wrestling. I study judo. I study different types of wrestling.
And jiu-jitsu.
No-gi jiu-jitsu. I study these different types of wrestling in hopes of becoming a complete grappler. Because at the end of the day, it's grappling, and there's just different rules behind each type of grappling style.
And he has, you know, big dreams and high aspirations. You know, he's been exposed to jiu-jitsu and the martial arts and boxing and wrestling ever since he was a little boy, ever since I started my career. And, you know, he has aspirations of not only competing at a high level, but winning multiple NCAA national titles, becoming multiple-time All-American. He wants to go to the Olympics and become an Olympian and represent Team USA and becoming a gold medalist. And afterwards, he's expressed to me, like, hey, Dad, I want to follow in your footsteps, and I want to be an MMA fighter. I want to fight in the UFC, Bellator, or whatever. I want to do WWE or New Japan Pro Wrestling or AEW or whatever. Like,
be that perfect Soviet Union experience.
You know, he wants to basically do what Kurt Angle did, but surpass that. And I know he's going to surpass. He has surpassed, you know, a lot of things that I've done. He will continue to surpass a lot of things that I've done and everything that I've done. And, like, one of my things that I used to always tell Jonathan is that you are destined to be great. Not only great in sport, but great in life. And then when it's all said and done, you know, everything is all settled, you know, everything is all said and done, he's, you know, going to transition into other aspects of life, whether it be giving back, coaching, you know, motivational speaking, you know, whatever he majors in college and whatever he gets his degree in. And, you know, he's going to have his own family, and he's going to be able to reflect and look back and have no regrets. And that's also something that I've always stressed to him, to basically do things your way, work hard, and basically at the end of your time, because we're only here in this realm, in this life, for a short period of time, you know, 70 years, 80 years, some who are blessed and lucky enough to live to 100. I'm not sure if I want to live to 100, but, you know, who knows? Maybe that'll change. But, you know, just to, when you look back on everything, you reflect on your life, you don't want to have any regrets. You don't want to be woulda, shoulda, coulda, woulda, or whatever. You want to just be fulfilled and content and have that peace of mind and that joy, knowing that you went balls to the wall and you lived life, man, and you had a great life and you helped people and you made a, you know,
significant change
and positive, impactful change on a global scale. You know what I mean? So where, you know, you've affected people.
And I have that joy already. Honestly, God forbid, I could die tomorrow, but I could die with a smile on my face, because I've lived these last 18 years in understanding with an open mind, with all of my heart, all of my love, all of my soul. Everything that I've been true about has been God, family, and wrestling, sports, jiu-jitsu. And everything else that I was talented at just came right after.
You keep on that path, yeah, thing, man. Keep on that path.
I'm going to say it right here. Look out, Dana White or Vince McMahon. I don't know if you're going to be around in the next 5 to 10 years or so, but,
God forbid,
hey, Jonathan Smith right here is the future of sports entertainment. He is the future of mixed martial arts. He is the future of combat sports. Take a hard look at him and know that.
Well, you know, one thing I told you before, you know, when we set up the show is I never delete a link. I always archive every show. You can go back a year from now, 6 years from now, or whatever, and re-listen to this interview. But this is going to be the first of many interviews that I have a feeling in my heart that I'm going to be doing with you guys. You know,
oh yeah,
Fernando, I kind of want to take a step back away from Jonathan for a second, and then we'll wrap things up. You know, what was it like for you to go to the 71st annual Cannes Film Festival and represent the aspects that she put in Black Lightning.
Oh, wow. I mean, that was a huge esteemed honor, and I want to shout out Choice Skinner of Breaking Through Acting Workshop. That's my acting coach, located in Sherman Oaks, California. He also was the director and writer of that piece. It was actually a DC comic, a fan film, based off of the DC comic Black Lightning and the characters from that comic. And it was just a group of us that just got together and wanted to shed some light and, you know, bring some exposure to some of the more obscure characters from the DC universe, like Black Lightning, and also some of the minority characters, you know, African American, you know, heroes such as Black Lightning or Static Shock, or, you know, how they've done with Black Panther. And, you know, they wrote a phenomenal script. Again, it was a fan film, and they just, you know, got a bunch of us together, and, you know, we basically did it on virtually no budget. And we shopped it out, was sent out to various different film festivals and award ceremonies, and it started racking up a lot of different awards at the film festivals, various different film festivals. And then we got word that it got accepted to the Short Film Corner at the 71st Annual Festival of Cannes, the Cannes Film Festival, which is the most prestigious film festival in the world, you know, above Sundance and South by Southwest and, you know, Toronto International Film Festival, ABFF, Hollywood, you know, Film Festival, whatever, you know, and just to be out there and to get that international exposure and the taste of what the international scene is, and to get that buzz and to start to develop an international fan base and rubbing elbows, networking, connecting with showrunners and producers and, you know, distribution companies, and just learning so much in the process, not just, you know, as an actor or as a stuntman, but also, you know, dabbled a bit, you know, in producing as well. And where I produced a couple films already, Jonathan was actually in one of the films. Jonathan has, you know, kind of got his feet wet a little bit in Hollywood and acting. And he just recently did a film with Terrence Howard and R.J. Matei from Breaking Bad. The film was called Triumph. It's in post-production right now. And, you know, that's Jonathan's first, you know, feature, major feature that he's done. And, you know, just to be out there in Canada, again, it was just a phenomenal experience. I learned a lot. And, you know, if it wasn't for Choice Skinner and the Breaking Through Acting Workshop and having that opportunity, you know, it wouldn't have happened. So, you know, all things happen, you know, for a reason, for a season. And, you know, I'm just thankful and blessed to, you know, have Choice as an acting coach, and, you know, everything that I've gotten and learned and received, you know, through him and through that class. And, you know, again, kind of like how I got into acting, it just all happened by, you know, circumstance. You know, I never thought about being an actor, never really wanted to be an actor or in show business or whatever have you. It's crazy. I never really thought about MMA or fighting or whatever. You know, again, coming from Philadelphia, I was a teenage father. Just to give, you know, a brief summation, you know, I went to the military, married, you know, my son's mom. I have an older son. He's John's big brother. Marriage didn't work out. Married at 17, separated at 18, divorced by 19, never touched marriage ever again since. you know, and then didn't work out. Moved from Philadelphia to Los Angeles, like around 2002. You know, couldn't really find a job. So, you know, I wanted to actually get into law enforcement. I wanted to be a cop because I was a military police officer when I was in the Air Force. And I couldn't get hired because I had bad credit. So I reenlisted, went back in the Army. I did the Army for 3 years. I wanted to go to school and everything else. So I reverted to the National Guard component of the U.S. Army, where I was a 13 Bravo Field Artillery Cannon crew member. So that was from 03 to 06. I was set to deploy to Iraq for the war back in 2005. I got hurt in my pre-deployment training, separated shoulder, dislocated shoulder, had to have surgery. And then around the same time, that's when I got full custody of Jonathan and his older brother. And they were actually coming to me from foster homes because them, along with the other siblings, they have like 8 other siblings altogether. My ex-wife has had like 10 kids. These are true factual statements. Their mom, my ex-wife, has like, you know, 10 kids, all different guys, and all of the kids got taken away from her and put in DHS in Philadelphia, which is the Department of Human Services, which is like CPS, Child Family Services. And they were in there for about a couple years, from like September 2003 to about March of 2005. But in January 2005, that's when, because all of 2004, I was going back and forth to fight for custody. And actually, I, you know, didn't know Jonathan was mine because he was presumed to be somebody else's, you know, as far as paternity is concerned. And, you know, first time I met Jonathan, he was 4 years old. And there was 4 years that elapsed that he didn't know I was his dad, and I didn't know he was my son. But, you know, nonetheless, paternity said he was mine, you know, the DNA, and I was awarded full custody of both him and his older brother, my older son, Fernando Jr. And just they've been with me ever since 2005 up until now. And then, you know, I kind of gotten like MMA. I just, you know, I'm out of the military. I'm recovering from the surgery and the injury. I had to drop out of school because now I got 2 kids. I was actually playing football at the time for Santa Monica College in Santa Monica, California, being scouted, recruited, stuff like that, to transfer to maybe a bigger D1 university, the injury and all that stuff. And so now it's like, okay, what are you going to do now? Couldn't really find a job. So I started doing all the bodyguard stuff, the nightclub bouncer stuff. And, you know, I had 2 kids I had to take care of. And then at that time, again, this is like circa pre-2008, prior to when sanctioning, you know, for MMA really came into full effect in California and SoCal. And, you know, a lot of the smokers and all that stuff going on. And surprisingly, a lot of the bouncers at the various clubs, strip clubs, nightclubs, whatever, they were like, you know, Brazilian or Dutch kickboxers or BJJ guys, cage fighters. And that was the term, you know, they were cage fighters, you know. And they were like, hey, Fernando, you're kind of a big guy. At that time, you know, I was about 260, 265. Played football, and then of course I'm coming off my surgery, so I turned into a fat ass, you know, from, you know, painkillers and sitting on my ass and eating or whatever have you, recovering from the injury from the army. And then I was invited, and I went down to a few different schools and locations, and I went to that spot in Leimert Park off 43rd and Crenshaw with Coach Ahmad Reese and a lot of other great guys from Brian Peterson. Was affiliated with Ahmad, and there was a team called Team Freedom. You know, Ryan Peterson, Robert Ferguson was a former boxing coach. He's a former boxing coach for ferocious Fernando Vargas, and, you know, Ahmad Reese, and a lot of other great guys that came through him. Ahmad Reese, by the way, is a black belt under the Joe Marrero lineage in BJJ. And, you know, basically I was like one of those guys, you know, because, you know, MMA still at that time, early 2000s, was like, you know, a novelty still. So, you know, I was always been a fan since I was a kid. I remember watching the first UFC, UFC 1 in 93, Royce Gracie and all that stuff or whatever. But, you know, I was a jock. I was a football player, big, strong, athletic. And, you know, I was, you know, going through the motions and kicking everybody's ass in the gym. And then finally they put me up against this 5-foot-nothing Brazilian, you know, 150 pounds soaking wet or whatever. And I was ragdolling him, you know, and tossing him around. And then next thing you know, I gas out, you know, because my cardio wasn't that good. And then, okay, my turn. And he twisted me up like a pretzel. And that situation itself was humbling. And, like, I was like, oh, my God, how did you do that? I must learn this. And ever since then, I just dedicated myself to MMA, BJJ, no-gi submission, grappling, catch, wrestling, all that. And then, like, around 2016, I had hit my apex where I had won 2 titles with Gladiator Challenge. And then I always wanted to do pro wrestling, you know, for whatever reason. Then I ended up meeting Salofa Fatu Jr., known in the WWE world as Rikishi, big Samoan guy, him, Gangrel, the Vampire Warrior, Reno Anawahi, you know, the Samoan Dynasty. You know, they were my trainers. It was a pro wrestling training facility called Knox Pro Academy. And I trained with them, got exposure. Started doing a lot of the independent pro wrestling stuff, and they got booked to do a movie with Adam Sandler in 2016 called Sandy Wexler. It's on Netflix, with Adam Sandler, Terry Crews, and I guess there was a professional wrestling scene, you know, throughout the movie with Terry Crews where he played, you know, a professional wrestler at the time or whatever. And, you know, basically I just got pulled right in and asked if I wanted to do it and, you know, do the stunts. And then I got Taff Hartlead, and I ended up, you know, joining the union, SAG-AFTRA, and, you know, it's just been rocking and rolling ever since. And then, you know, I got management, I got representation, got an agent, got a manager, and just been doing things, you know. And then I did the Black Lightning. We went to Cannes. Then I was on Grownish on Freeform, the ABC network, which is a spinoff off of Blackish. Then I ended up doing Superstore on NBC with America Ferrera, and a lot of other things. So I'm on IMDb. Jonathan's on IMDb, and you know, we've done a lot of great things in Hollywood. And you know, just things have just organically manifested when it came to the, you know, entertainment industry, Tinseltown, Hollywood, and all that. And you know, I kind of take that, you know, I take those things as like signs, and we just move forward. You know what I mean? And you know, sometimes, you know, where we start, you know, in life or at whatever dispensation or juncture in your life, that's not going to be your, you know, your end destination. You know, that's not going to be the end result. And sometimes you just got to know how to transition and diversify. And especially if one door closes, or if you love something so much, but you know, it's not loving you back. So you just got to have the ability to, you know, have that discernment and to diversify. And sometimes you just got to shift gears. And I'm not saying that the, you know, doors to MMA are completely open. I still train, I'm still in shape and everything else. Actually, I just recently, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and say it right now, but this is the second time around that we've came around, you know, these possibilities or whatever have you. But a couple years ago, like, as you know, 2017 going into 2018, I was you know, approached and propositioned for a potential fight with Combate Americas against former WWE world champion superstar Alberto Del Rio, who's had some MMA fights or whatever. And I guess he was looking to have a final fight or two in 2018, but that got delayed, postponed, never happened. And then a guy by the name of Mike Aframowitz, and also Campbell McLaren, owner of Combate Americas, they recently approached me or whatever. And I kind of like just threw my name in the hat, like, look, I'll be interested in the fight with Alberto or even Tito Ortiz, you know. But, you know, I got a kid, Jonathan, I got to put through college, and I got a mortgage. So, you know, let's talk some money. I paid my dues throughout the last 12 years. I fought in the sport on the low-level circuits, regional circuits. You know how it goes, bro. You know, $1,000 show, $1,000 to win, $1,500. You got medicals, you got this. And then after training fees and coaches and just living in bills or whatever have you, you know, as a journeyman, you know, it's really a hard way to make a living. You know what I mean? I got a winning record, 2 world titles, 10-2 record. And, you know, hey, Campbell McLaren, you know, Michael Aframowitz, hey, let's get it done. If you guys are looking for a fight for Alberto Del Rio, let's make it happen. He's Mexican. I'm a Puerto Rican descent. You know, I'm in the indie pro wrestling scene, trained under WWE pro wrestling legend, you know, Rikishi, and he's a former WWE champion. You know, he's got some MMA fights under his belt, you know, 10-2 pro record, you know, winning record. I'm undefeated in the last 5 years. You know, I haven't lost since, what, 2014? You know, so, like, hey, let's make it happen. Campbell McLaren, Combate Americas, Michael Aframowitz, hey, Tito Ortiz, hey, anybody can get this smoke. You know what I mean? Hey, I'm just trying to make a living. That's it. So.
Hey, I'll see you. Campbell's actually a good friend of mine. Campbell, you better make that fight happen, brother. You know, this has been a tremendous show. You know, I love the aspect. You know, I will add, you know, there is a new era to the sport popping up, and it's growing with great magnitude, and that's bare knuckle. You know, one thing I will say I like about the bare knuckle aspect is it's not, you know, 1500 to show, 1500 to win. It's a flat rate, you know. So
yeah,
you know, if they promise you $5,000, you get $5,000, you know, whether you win or lose. And I like that aspect being added to this sport. You know, that's how the sport should be. It shouldn't be, oh, you didn't win. Psych, you don't get the other half of your money. You know,
exactly.
You know, you train, you got training costs, pay me what I'm worth. You know,
exactly. And there's so much money in the sport. There has been so much money in the sport over the last 10, 15 years. It has grown so much exponentially. Like all fighters, like Why can't we get paid, you know, comparable to boxers? You know, why can't we get
right.
the Ali Act, you know, implemented into the world of MMA? You know, I know they were lobbying for that or whatever, but I know, you know, Dana White and a lot of other, you know, big-time promotions aren't happy about that, and they're kind of rallying against some of the lobbyists going to D.C., especially with, like, MMAFA, Mixed Martial Arts Fighters Association. You know, like, there's so much money that can just go around. Just like you said, pay the fighters what we're worth, man. And we're going out there risking life and limb and trying to put food on the table and put our kids through college and keep a roof over our heads and keep food on the table.
Exactly. Hey, if you're open to bare knuckle, I happen to know the matchmaker quite well. I have for quite a few years, but we'll talk about that off the air. You know,
okay.
I got one more question that I think really needs to be defined in this show, because I had this gentleman on my show, and I don't think one show was enough to do with this man with what he's done in the sport. When you look at Kenny Johnson, you look at a man that he's quiet. He really doesn't speak much about what he does, but yet he creates great aspects in the sport. If you had to surmise a statement, Fernando, about what Kenny Johnson has instilled in you, what would that statement be, my friend?
Oh, man. Kenny Johnson, man. I've known Kenny for a long time, for, man, 15, almost 20 years. You know, when he first came to Los Angeles, and, you know, I was probably fresh out here as well, and that's when I first started with the mod, and, you know, down there, little old rinky-dink gym in, you know, 43rd and Crenshaw, just a hole-in-the-wall mom-and-pop spot, and it was like a dungeon. We used to call it the dungeon. And, you know, go way back, and just with Kenny, man, just, you know, he's instilled a lot of things in me, you know, and just with him being a wrestler with that mental toughness and that mindset, and I guess maybe that's where Jonathan gets it from me as well, and I guess, you know, a lot of that was instilled, you know, in me just from life, but also from Kenny Johnson as well, but just, you just don't die, man. You don't quit, you don't give up, like, you fucking go, and you go balls to the wall, and, you know, that's one thing people will always say about me. You know, you ask around, you know, hey, Fernando's one tough son of a bitch. And, you know, Kenny has always been, you know, a tough guy. And he's just always that one coach to just push you. And, you know, when, you know, a lot of people maybe perhaps, you know, didn't believe in me or didn't, you know, because, you know, who am I? I'm Fernando, you know, Marrero, you know, the Philadelphia badass, you know, just some kid from Philly. You know, I don't have a pedigree. I wasn't born into a family or, you know, I don't have the connections and ties in MMA or in other aspects of life or whatever have you, but I've just always, like, paved my own way and charted my own course. And he just, you know, was always, you know, there to, you know, push me, you know, when other people maybe didn't take a chance on me. And there's actually a point in time where I got injured a lot. I was very injury prone. And, you know, a lot of people probably like, well, man, this guy can't stay healthy. So, you know, but, you know, he still allowed me, you know, he invited me down to Black House MMA, you know, and the only way that you get the Black House is through invitation only. And, you know, I just earned my stripes and proved myself through the injuries. And I just persevered, you know, and, you know, it's just, you know, he's just a great guy. And even with, you know, me stepping away and focusing on other aspects of life, such as, you know, wrestling or going towards Hollywood and doing the acting and the producing and the stuntman work and all that. You know, he's, you know, known Jonathan since he was a little boy and taking an interest even more so as Jonathan, you know, just worked his butt off, you know, throughout the years. And, you know, Kenny's been instrumental in really giving John a lot, you know what I mean, taking extra time and refining his technique and, you know, giving him some Greco stuff here, some freestyle stuff here, and some folk style stuff here. Kenny actually has this camp, his bolt wrestling camp, every June, where Jonathan will be attending coming up soon. You know, it's just, you know, he's done a lot, you know, and he's done a lot for me, done a lot for my sons, done a lot for Jonathan, and, you know, definitely, you know, Kenny's family, man. And, you know, love that dude, you know, to pieces, and he's just a good dude. And, You know, sometimes he, you know, people may think that, well, he's an asshole or he's abrasive or whatever, but he's just old school, man. You know, he's a straight shooter. He's not going to bullshit you and, you know, don't waste his time and, you know, he's going to call it straight down the middle.
That's the way it should be. You know, I love today's show. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are. Generally, people that come on my show, 3 or 4 hours after the show, it kind of sinks in what type of aspect they got to share of who they are. You know, Jonathan, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot, homie, because, you know, your father is a tremendous fan. He tells it like it is. You know, he walks the walk, and he's a prime example of what a true man is and what a true father is. You know, when you sit back and you look at all that he's given up to get you where you're at today, and all of the obstacles he's had to overcome, all of the adversity he's had to face to see you succeed, what does it truly mean to you, and what words would you like to give your father in thanks?
What it means to me is that, because my dad would always tell me that I was meant to see the promised land, and that maybe he wasn't meant to see it, but he was meant to be my guide to take me there. And that always stuck with me. The idea of being the prayer of all, every ancestor that I ever had, the prayer of all the people who wanted this one moment, this one person to be what they couldn't. And when I think about that, I feel so much love, and I just admire the fact that my dad is willing to give up everything so I can see the other side. It's like a humble suicide. Humble suicide.
You know,
he gave up everything that he could so I can be what I want to be.
It's a tremendous statement. You know, the honor was all mine. You know, generally, I run a show like this about an hour long. We've been going an hour and a half now, and I could sit and talk to you guys all day. You know, I'm just being honest.
Likewise. Yeah, it's fun.
You know, I'm glad I created this aspect in the sport and this platform, because it really does show the world that people in the sport, people in the industry, they're not beasts. We're just human, and we're just doing a job, but just a different job than you. You know, humility goes a long way in this sport, and both of you are tremendously humble. You have great integrity. And Jonathan, the world is yours. And on this final part, if you had to make a statement to the wrestling world, to the listeners of the show today, about what they can expect in the future and how appreciative you are for this point in your life, what would this statement be, young man?
Thank you for making Jonathan Smith who he is today. Because Jonathan Smith, you know, when he comes hard.
I like that. You know, it truly is an honor, and I truly am humbled to have been able to interview both of you today at the same time. You know, it gives me faith and value, and not only the older aspects of the sport, but the up-and-coming aspects of the sport. Fernando, I commend you on a job well done with your son. You know, I know there's going to be more great things coming from you and more great things coming from him. I think the second chapter is truly just about to begin. With that being said, I'm gonna toss the mic to Jonathan first. If you have any sponsors, which you're collegiate, so I don't know if you have any, but if you have any sponsors, friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours, son.
Well, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been a huge part of my success. I really don't have any sponsors. All I have is the love for my family and friends.
And where can they find you on social media? Can they find you on social media?
Of course they can find me on social media.
give them your hand.
Okay. PBA Junior, literally PBA JR. That is my Instagram.
At PBA Junior.
My Facebook is the same thing. At Jonathan Smith, JonovanSmith.
And if you guys want to be dazzled, wowed, mesmerized,
check me out on IMDb.
IMDb, but also go into the search engines, Google search engine, type in Jonathan Smith Wrestling, and a fuck ton of content will come up. Highlight reels, full length matches on flowwrestling.com, trackwrestling.com. You know, pretty much his whole career is archived on Flow Wrestling and Track Wrestling.
Seriously. And people love
the first four pages on Google.
Don't open anything.
Yeah. The first
like
four pages of Google is Jonathan.
Yep.
On the real, though, the first four pages is him. And that's a true testament to his career, you know. Jonathan, thank you for letting me interview you today. You're a tremendous young warrior, and I'm very proud of you on winning the Triple Crown. You know, Fernando, thank you for the honor of interviewing your son. It's been a tremendous opportunity for my listeners to hear a young warrior that is so humble.
And we thank you, man.
Thank you so much
for having us. And also, too, you know, we're going to go ahead and shout out. We're going to publicly, you know, state this. You know, Jonathan is still deciding. He's going to be a late decider. As far as we haven't decided where he was going to sign or commit to yet. We got quite a few offers on the table. But, hey, come one, come all. College recruiters, scouts, coaches. You know, it's always been a dream for Jonathan to go to Penn State. Kel Sanderson, where you at, brother? Yo, Jonathan Smith wants to come back to, you know, my home state of Pennsylvania and wrestle for the Nittany Lions and, you know, winning, you know, multiple national titles and All-American honors and, you know, have a direct pipeline to the Olympics. Or Coach John Smith from Oklahoma State, where you at?
Our names are the same.
Tom and Terry Brands from University of Iowa, where you at?
I trained under your student.
You know, hey, Kenny Johnson, you know, he was an alum of Iowa and University of Iowa and, you know, wrestled under Dan Gable, the godfather of wrestling, of NCAA collegiate wrestling, you know, one of the all-time greats. So college coaches, NCAA, Matt Lindland, Greco team coach at the Olympic Training Center, Jonathan Smith is looking to just be great. He is great. You know, 2020 Olympics may be aggressive, but, hey, Jonathan has conquered, you know, other things in life, and I'm sure he can conquer that feat. Whatever he puts his mind to, he can achieve and accomplish.
I promise you,
you put a wall in front of him, he will crush it. 2024 Olympics, and then 2028, that would be amazing for Jonathan to compete here in Los Angeles, in his hometown, Los Angeles, California, on the West Coast, at the 2028 Olympics. You know, hey, this young man is going places. And, again, find him on Instagram, at PBA Junior. All the search engines on Google, whatever have you. You can find me and him on IMDb, Jonathan Smith IMDb, Fernando Marrero IMDb. You can find me on Instagram, at Team_PBA, and just shout out, you know, to everybody and anybody that's had a hand in our development as a family and as a friend, as a competitor, as a fighter through MMA, through jiu-jitsu, from, you know, Sean Chiabero. You know, I'm a purple belt under Sean Chiabero, to, you know, Marcus Venezia De Lucia from Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu, Kenny Johnson, everybody at Black Health MMA headquarters in Gardena, California. Past, present, the future, you know, Ahmad Reese, Antonio McKee of the Body Shop, Pat King, black belt under Hoyce Gracie, you know, like, and if anybody else I've forgotten names, hey, trust me, you're in my heart. I haven't forgotten, you know, you know, who you are and what you've meant and done for me, meant for me, meant to me, and my family and my sons and, you know, specifically Jonathan for where he's. He's a shining star right now, and
if you're in Game of Thrones, give me a call.
And it's a lot of it is as a result of, you know, him going through that cultivating, grooming, brazening, you know, process, you know, throughout the years. And all of you have been vital and integral in his development, my development, and we appreciate everyone, everybody that just has shown love and support, continue to show love and support. Yo, we're going to show love and support back. And, yo, Mr. Don McGuire, we appreciate you. Thank you again, once again.
Thank you so much.
You know, we're humbled and we're honored and we're privileged. Thank you for having us on and giving us a platform to give the world to, you know, get a chance to get to know us and, you know, to see who we are and what we're about. And, you know, for that, we're eternally grateful. Thank you.
Oh, man. I think it's the other way around. You know, I'm truly humbled and grateful myself. You know, to all my listeners out there, the more downloads of this episode today, the more airtime we get play in succession on iHeartRadio next week. Faster way to do it is go to your Google Play Store, download the app CastBox FM, and you can start, stop a show. You don't have to deal with the corporate aspects of them making you start the show over again so they can get paid again. Go to CastBox at the Google Play Store, download the app. The show will be permanently stored in there. There's 26 other different platforms. Just search the show on Google. You know, I love you guys.
Hey,
man.
Don, if
you
I
know?
May. Yeah, I love you too, brother. Don, if I may, I just want to interject and say a couple more things. Also, too, I don't believe we had, I think we did, but just in case, well, we can't forget the man that has, you know, done a lot for Jonathan and pretty much has molded and cultivated his career over the last 4 years in high school.
Thank you, God.
God, you know, that's first, foremost, primarily foundational.
Thank you, Jimmy.
But Coach Jimmy Medeiros, the head coach at Birmingham Community Charter High School in Lake Balboa, Van Nuys, Encino area.
He's a great coach.
Great coach.
One
he's a Fresno State Bulldog alum. You know, he's from up north, NorCal area, but he's done a tremendous job in creating and help developing Jonathan and where he's at today. And also, Coach Ahmad Reese, man. Coach Ahmad Reese, like I said, a pioneer, one of those guys who's been around in the MMA scene in Los Angeles for a lot of years since the embryonic stages of MMA and jiu-jitsu and NHB, no holds barred. But, you know, he's battling a condition right now called superficial siderosis. Basically, it's like a neurological disorder where the brain bleeds.
The blood dries
and it leaves the crystallized iron deposits on the brain where it impairs motor skills, motor functions, equilibrium, memory loss, the whole nine. So if you can send your thoughts, love and prayers and, you know, just trying to create awareness about that condition and whatever I can do to, you know, bring attention and awareness and to support Coach Ahmad Reese in whatever way possible. I love that brother, you know, from the bottom of my heart. He's been there. He's family and always going to love and support him no matter what.
Most definitely. Very well said. You know, my friends, truly honored and humbled, and thank you so much. This isn't the first nor the last time you will be on my show. You two are tremendous. Jonathan, keep doing what you're doing, my man. I'm extremely proud of you. I'm going to make sure the world takes notice to you and gets a better understanding of what life can truly be about without all the social stigmatas and the way this entitlement and millennial generation is growing up. You're a prime example of what it is to be a true young man in the sport. And I'm truly honored you came on the show. Fernando, God bless you, my brother. It's been a tremendous episode. I'm humbled that you gave me the honor and the opportunity to interview your son. And
thank
you both.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, and God bless you guys, and have a tremendous day.
God bless you. One more thing, Don. I'm sorry. This Saturday, June 8th, at 4 p.m. in Inglewood, at Ability First, which is a nonprofit organization that helps and aids with children with special needs. We're actually doing a professional wrestling showcase show down there for children, for charity, for the children with special needs this Saturday, June 8th, with Amped Up Wrestling. You can look up Amped Up Wrestling, Ability First. You can look up Sean Black, who's the head promoter down there as well. And then from there, you can catch the PBA Philadelphia Badass going from one venue to the next, because I'm in the business of, you know, snapping necks and cashing checks, and I'll be at UEW Underground Empire Wrestling later that evening for another show. and it's going to be held at the Inoki Dojo in Huntington Park, California. And, you know, just come out, show love. And, again, for the Amped Up Wrestling Ability First, it's for charity. It's for children with special needs. You know, just continue to support. And sometimes that's what it's all about. You know, life is all about, you know, making a difference and putting smiles on faces, especially to those in need.
Most definitely. I commend you on that. Gentlemen, it's been a tremendous show, tremendous opportunity for you to grow and let the world see who both of you are. And with that being said, I'm truly honored, and I can't wait till we do it again. Thank you, gentlemen, and God bless you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. God bless.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a hell of a show. Didn't expect to go that long, but I could talk to them for hours. Truly a tremendous pair, father and son duo. On that note, have a good day, and God bless.
I'm in the booth. I'm in the booth. Say something on the mic. Booth. Say something heavy.
Oh, yo, that's what I'm talking about. My young boy up in the booth. He just ain't kicking live.
Whip for him, I get deported. Fish me alive, less than anointed. Broke this at 111, recorded. Clock struck 12, bank on water. My sound was stony just for some stock, nigga. Still independent, been in the lot, nigga.